Yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And it is my pleasure to introduce Butch M. from Toronto.
Thanks, Gary. My name's Butch Maslin. I'm alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I want to thank Billy for the invitation to come part and come and take part in the meeting tonight. I'm happy to be in Virginia. This Zoom thing is the most, we were just talking about it, I just cannot get my head right around it. I don't know if this happens to any of you guys, but it's like, I sometimes think I'm going to Virginia to talk when I'm just really in my office. It's the weirdest feeling I have ever had. And so I was talking yesterday, I think, or the day before, and there were some folks from Israel and Spain and the Netherlands and a bunch of places. And I'm saying, gosh, it's really great to be here in a meeting with people from Israel. Like, they're really on the meeting from Israel. Like, they've come to the meeting. It's just the darndest thing I've ever seen. And I want to tell you that I'm all very close to illiterate when it comes to the, well, I just gave up my BlackBerry this year. It's been a traumatic time for me. And I've got one of these phones. I don't even know what you call this damn thing, but I'll tell you, there's way too much gadgets and stuff on it for me. And I want to just tell you this, because I come here to share of myself with you and be honest and transparent the best I can, because I think it's important for me, if I'm going to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and particularly to grow in alcoholics, to do that. But when Zoom first happened here and all our meetings shut down, I was negative to it. I really didn't want to do Zoom, and I would say Zoom isn't for me. And I was having some folks call me, friends of mine, call me to come and maybe share at their group and a place. And I was saying, no, I don't talk on Zoom. And in prayer, it came to me. I did this for a couple months. I wanted to be truthful. And I would, but here, and so this, what this Zoom did was, when I said it's stupid, it's dumb, I don't want to do it, is I don't understand it. And it frightens me. That's what the truth was. But let me tell you the real truth. The real truth is I was saying no to people who asked me to come and share because I was more concerned about how I'd sound than being helpful to another alcoholic. And that's the truth. I ain't here to whip myself or beat myself up. I'm way past that. But it's important that I acknowledge that to you. And it's more important that I see that and understand that, because here's what I glean from that. I need to be in Alcoholics Anonymous, in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, every bit, maybe more than I've ever had to be in my life. Because the ego, self, can start to rebuild in my life without me ever knowing it, and putting it off to some other crazy excuse of why I'm not doing it, rather than the absolute truth about it. So I'm a man, I then, you know, God help me see all this stuff. And since then, I'm in awe of this Zoom. It just blows my mind. It blows my mind. The things that were, now, don't get me wrong. When the meetings are open, you probably might not see me on Zoom anymore, but this thing, we can do some things here that we can't even do in the meetings. Like, you know, I'm going to tell my story at some point, I promise you. But anyway, I just kind of get going on stuff. But I was just thinking about this before coming on, you know. I was just thinking about this. Like, I've met Billy and stuff a few times over the years and that. But there's a very good chance that if Zoom was not here, I might never have seen Billy again in my lifetime. We're in two different countries. We're a couple thousand miles apart. And I've been seeing friends. Like, I have a lot of friends in the United States of America. I love United States of America. And I have a lot of friends in that there, but we're some of us 2,000-3,000 miles apart. And sometimes we go a few years without seeing each other at conferences and that, right? But now I'm seeing them all the time. It's just mind blowing to me what we do. We put a conference together in half an hour. We don't even have to pay for the speakers to fly in or hotels or nothing. It is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And doesn't God take care of us? Doesn't God take care of us? Man, that virus hit, that virus shut us down totally. And I have no idea what it would have been like in this year had this Zoom not been here. And I'll tell you, alcoholics, we are resourceful people. When you've lived the life we've lived, you got to learn to be resourceful, don't you, Denise? Huh? We get resourceful. Well, I'll tell you, when that damn virus hit, we said, to hell with that, man. We got right on top of this, and it's just been, we've been going stronger than we've ever been going. So I am really, truly happy to be here with you folks tonight in this meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. You sure want to believe that. It's just been a great, great thing for me. My home group is the Three Legacies group, Alcoholics Anonymous, and we meet on Mondays and Thursdays just outside the city of Toronto. If you're ever in our way, we would love to see you. I'll give you my number. You call, we'll take you out for dinner and a meeting for sure. And I'm a group guy, Billy. I'm a group guy. I believe in the home group. I'm a guy that believes that the home group is the heartbeat of AA. That's not podium banter, something I read on a pamphlet. Well, I did read it on a pamphlet, but I truly believe that the home group is the heartbeat of AA, the heartbeat of AA. I believe, fellow alcoholics, we can only be as effective as the group that we belong to. We can only be as effective of the group that supports us, and we can only be effective of carrying a message to new people if we have an environment to bring them to where recovery is happening. And so I truly believe in the home group. I believe that the home group is meant to feel what it's called, home, home. That when I walk into my home group on a Monday and Thursday night, it's like I'm home. And it is just a wonderful experience for me. And so I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to say I belong to the best group in the world. Sam, I don't say that anymore. I find it very arrogant of me. But I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I belong to a group where all three legacies are in place, where personal recovery is there, where we study and teach our 12 steps out of the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's more to it than that. I'm a group that belongs in all three legacies, where unity is there, where we operate under the umbrella of our 12 traditions, where they're not something to be stuck on the wall to be read once a week, but there's something to be studied and to be taught and to, as a group, operate within that umbrella and in our personal lives in those traditions. I belong to a group that believes in service, where it's not one or two individuals constantly doing the work, but where we operate together as a group to carry the message to the alcoholic. We don't put on coffee and hope they come. We go get them. We go get them. We have committees that go to our detox every Monday and Thursday and bring those new people to our meeting. We have a beginner's meeting on Monday night. I don't know if you do this in Virginia or not, but I go to meetings sometimes. There's brand new people from detox centers and treatment there. And we say to them, join a group and get a sponsor. Like they somehow know what that means. So we have that beginner's room so they can find out what it means to be at a home group and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. What it means to be sponsored and to sponsor. And so we have that beginner's room so what they can find out what Alcoholics Anonymous is and what Alcoholics Anonymous isn't, what Alcoholics Anonymous does and what Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't do. And we have that beginner's room, and it's wonderful. And if you come to my home group on a Monday or Thursday night, there'll be six or eight people at that door to welcome you and shake your hand. Because I'm a guy that believes that's the single most important thing that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. The single most important thing as a home group is to be at that front door when that new guy or new gal walked through for their first meeting. Because an in-depth version of step four doesn't mean a damn thing to them, but a warm handshake, welcome, come and get a cup of coffee and sit here with us, means a great, great deal. I belong to a group, there's enthusiasm. I like enthusiasm. Now you're gonna find this hard to believe tonight, but I'm an enthusiastic guy. I love enthusiasm. Hey, Myron, don't you love that at your home group? You go into that group on group night and there's that laughter in the room. There's an energy in the room. There's a buzz in that room. It's just like being in a bar. It's beautiful, it's beautiful. Everybody talking, nobody listening. Nobody listening. Alcoholics are the most self-centered people in the world. Have you ever tried to talk to somebody after the meeting? 10 people walk up and say, I don't mean to interrupt. Oh, yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. Home group. It is important that we have that laughter in the room. It is important that that new guy or new gal hear that laughter and know that we're not a glum lot and that we absolutely insist upon enjoying life. And there's much more to Alcoholics Anonymous than just not drinking and going to meetings. So I am real happy, Billy, to be in a strong home group, Alcoholics Anonymous, here tonight. Anyway, they're thinking, well, did this guy ever drink? Gary outlined my job perfectly tonight. What a beautiful way for me to start the meeting was that on page 29 of what you just read, Gary. Because you described the purpose of the meeting tonight, the purpose of a speaker meeting. The sole purpose of my job tonight and anyone else sharing at a meeting in this manner is in our own language and from our own point of view, how we're able to find a power greater than ourselves would solve our problem. That's what we do in telling our stories. That is the purpose of an AA talk. And so I'll try my best to do that here in the time I have left, now that I've squandered most of it. I was 4 years old. I was 4 years old, and my ma's neighbor made the effort to come over to my mom's house. Now, this guy didn't know my ma too good, but he made the effort. And he came over to the house, knocked on the door. We had a little home, and I was sitting in the living room, and this guy came in at the doorway, and my mom was there, and he pointed over to me in the living room and said to my mom, he said, I want you to know, pointing at me, that you're raising a juvenile delinquent. I'm 4 years old, for God's sakes, and this guy's calling me a juvenile delinquent. Well, I got to tell you, that guy turned out to be a prophet. He was a prophet, that guy. I'm 10 years old, 11 years old, and I'm in a classroom at school, and the teacher announces that there's going to be a walkathon, where you get people to pledge money and you walk a lot of miles and the poor people get the money. I don't know if you have that there or not, but we have it here. And she said, I want you to come up to the front of the class and get your sheet to get your pledges on. Now, I made a conscious decision. I sat at the back of the class where the smart kids sit, and I made a conscious decision from the time I got to the back of the class to the front of the class, I'm taking two sheets, one for the poor people and one for me. I figure if I'm walking, I'm getting some of the green. And that's how I was to go through the next 20 years of my life. Lying, cheating, and stealing. Some sort of sense of entitlement that I don't need to do a hard day's work for a good day's pay. I'm going out in that world and taking what I want. And I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, and I haven't even started doing serious drinking. I'm 25 years old. And by now, my wife is throwing me out of our home. And I want to tell you that I loved her as much as I was capable of loving at that time. It's important that I say that to you, as much as I was capable of loving at that time. I had a new address every night. I lived in the stairwells of apartment buildings in downtown Toronto. I just went from building to building. Dustin, I had a new address each night. And at nighttime, I was under the stairwell in that building. And in the daytime, I was like a rat in a sewer. Out in those streets looking to score, looking to scam, looking to rip somebody off to get the money I need to get to do the things I need to do. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about AA luggage, matching green garbage bags. I didn't have any AA luggage, had the clothes on my back. Still had an ultra suede jacket though. Good to be cool at any expense. I'm 25 years old, I'm living in stairwells of apartment building, I got the clothes on my back, and nobody wants anything more to do with me. And let me add right now, nor should they, because alcoholics of my type are takers. I use and I take from everybody I come in contact with. Now, it doesn't always appear that way, because I'm a guy who's constantly seeking your approval. I'm a guy who wants everyone to like him. So I'm the guy in the bar buying the drinks for everybody, passing the bag around, giving everybody that, only so you'd like me. Not because I cared about you. I couldn't care less if you lived or died. It made no difference to me. I'm a taker. And I'll tell you who I take from the most. The people who love me. The people who care about me. Because they love me so much, they can't stop trying. This time it's going to work. This time it's good. He's going to get it this time. And they keep giving and giving. And I keep taking and taking. Till eventually I break their hearts. Eventually those people that love me got to push me away. Because they can't stand to watch it any longer. And that's where I am. I'm in the East End of Toronto one night and all jacked up, as I said, nowhere to go. And my wife and I owned a home in what they call the Beaches, down near the lakefront. And it had a screened-in porch and a couple wicker couches on it. And I thought, I'm going to slip in there and get a couple hours and get out before she wakes up. Well, I pass out and I wake up to one of these. And I opened my eyes and looked, and there was that little gal that I loved. And she looked at me with disgust and pity. And she said, Butch, you're a useless piece of scum. And you will never change. And if you cared anything about me at all, you'd get up and get out of here. And please don't ever come back, because I can't stomach to look at you. And I got up, and it was a hot, hot summer day. I'm hungover. I'm dope sick. I'm dirty. I'm heart sick. And I walked down to the boardwalk, down on the lakefront. And I'm sitting down there in that condition on a park bench. And about 10 feet away, there was another park bench, and there was a little boy, 5 or 6 years old, sitting there eating a popsicle. And I looked over at that little boy, and I thought to myself, I wish I had a dime for a popsicle. The big shot, the dope dealer, everybody's friend, good old Butch, sitting on a park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Nobody in this world wanting anything more to do with me. And here was the thought that I had at that moment, as clear as I'm thinking right now. I knew at that moment that park bench, or somewhere like it, was where I was going to end up every single time. And I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I was 25 years old. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. I had 8 more years on those streets. And I will not bore you tonight with a horror story, because I don't believe it would serve any purpose. You see, if you're alcoholic like me, you already know it never gets better. It always gets worse. And I had 8 years on those streets. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33, and I joined a group and I got a sponsor and I did the things you guys told me to do. Forget this suggested crap, the stuff you told me to do. Denise, you know where I was a number of years ago now, huh? I was in Rome, Italy. Rome, Italy. Standing in the Sistine Chapel, looking at the paintings of Michelangelo from hundreds of years before, my wife standing beside me. And the tears started to roll down my cheeks. And I thought of that guy sitting on the park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Long way from that park bench to the Sistine Chapel in Rome. It is a long way from where you and I came from. Many of us here tonight, the dregs of society. Many of us here tonight, our own families didn't want us any longer. Yet here we sit tonight, members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, living good, rich, full, productive lives. How do we get from where we were to where we sit tonight? How does that happen for you and I? Because it's not supposed to. But you know how it happens, don't you? It happens one way and only one way. And that is through the grace of God. Through a loving God that you introduced me to through the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous and a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. You sure want to believe I'm grateful to be here and a part of this society. I started drinking at an early age. I hear people talk about dysfunctional families. Did I come from dysfunctional family? I have no idea. I said to my sponsor one time, Billy, I said, you think I came from a dysfunctional family? He said to me, you were in it. Cruel man. Now, I don't know if I came from a dysfunctional family or not, but let me tell you something. There was a lot of parties in my home. There was a lot of drinking in my home. As a little boy, they'd let me play bartender. And they'd let me take beers and take the empties, and they'd let me have swigs. And they'd say, isn't he cute? And I love that attention. So I started to drink when I was 4 years old. Now, I wasn't a daily drinker when I was four. My allowance wouldn't allow it. I actively sought out alcohol the first time, 12 years old, 13 years old. I got a guy to go into a liquor store, get us a couple bottles of wine. I was going to be a wine connoisseur, Byron. Two bottles of Old Sailor. We used to say, come alive for $1.05. I think you compared to what you call Thunderbird in your country. And I'll tell you this, any wine I ever drank had a cap, not a cork. We drank that wine, we got drunk, puked, and passed out, and that was the end of my social drinking, all downhill from there. Now, I don't know if you have this in Virginia or not, Billy, but I go to some meetings sometimes, and I sit in a meeting, and I hear people say something like this. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous was going to help me become a social drinker. You hear that there, Denise? Yeah. Came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous was going to help them become a social drinker. Let me tell you tonight, I didn't want to be a social drinker when I drank. I don't want to be a social drinker tonight. I don't particularly like social drinkers. I find them weird, weird. You ever watch a social drinker? They let the ice melt in their glass. That is alcohol abuse, my friends, alcohol abuse. You ever drink with a social drinker? It's enough to make you puke, isn't it? You're having a few scoots. Would you like another one? Oh, no thanks. I'm starting to feel it. Really? I thought that's when you put it in overdrive, social drinker. Now, I got to tell you, my beautiful wife, Dee, Dee's in the living right now. My wife's a social drinker, Billy. And a little while ago, I'm at home and we have an open concept home. And I'm in the living room and I look over and Dee's in the kitchen and she's got a bottle of wine on the counter with a funnel in it. I thought, what's she doing with that funnel? So I watched her and she took a glass of wine and started pouring it in the funnel. And I said to her, hey, what are you doing over there? And she says to me, I put too much in the glass. Jesus, Murphy. I said, don't you ever do that again. I'll divorce you, social drinkers. I'm a barroom drinker. I love bars. I don't identify with closet alcoholics. Doesn't mean they're not alcoholic. Just drank differently than me. You know, you hear them. They get the bottle, go in and lock the door, put on the country western music. I don't identify. Barroom drinker. Love a bar. I love bars. I like opening the door to a bar. That smoke and billow out, the tinkle of glass, the smell of stale urine. I love it. I love it. And I got to tell you, I like Nia. I thank God I never tried to get sober in the United States of America. I don't know if I'd have made it. God, I love drinking in your country. You got many more than we got here, Denise. I call them juke joints. You know those divey, scuzzy little rat hole joints, huh? Little neon sign says cocktails. Oh. I went to an AA thing a number of years ago in Pennsylvania. I decided to drive my wife come with me. I'm going through this little town. I'm going down the main street and I hammer on the brakes to my car. I'm backing my car up. My wife said to me, Butch, what are you doing? I said, I got to see this again. Guys, there it was, Billy, this divey, scuzzy little rat hole joint had a neon sign, said stop for one, stay till one. If I'd have been drinking, I'd have had that tattooed on me, just a work of art. Anyway, I'm not going to talk anymore about my drinking tonight, other than to quickly share with you. I hope we have some new folks on here tonight. I hope we have somebody that's new to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if you do or not, but I want to share something with you, particularly if you're new. What alcohol does for me. And the things that I'm going to share with you, I did not know this at the time. Most of what I share with you, I didn't know at the time. I saw this in inventory. I saw this as you help me take me back through my life and help me see my life honestly for the very first time ever, for the very first time ever. But as I look back today, I remember being a young kid in school, 8 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old, I don't know. And the teacher would ask a question and she'd start looking around the room to see who she's going to ask to answer that question. And my head would go down like this. Oh, Jesus, don't let her ask me. Because I knew if she made eye contact with me, she's going to ask me to answer the question. And I don't want to answer the question, even if I know the answer. When I went to school, you used to have to do book report. Get up in front of the classroom full of kids. Huh? No good. No, I get up in the morning, I'd say, Ma, I've been puking all night. I'm sick. I can't go to school today. Please don't make me go. Because I want to tell you, I would be terrified, terrified at the thought of getting up in front of that classroom full of kids. Every decision I made in my life was based on fear. Most of it unfounded and ungrounded, but fear. Where I go, what I do, who I hang out with is all based on a comfort level. I don't know about any of you guys, but I every now and then would get goofy. I go on about a 5-day run. I come home on a Sunday after being gone for 5 days. My wife would be sitting there waiting. And I'd walk in, I'd say, sweetheart, that's it. No more. No more. I know I said this last week, but this time I swear in my Ma's life, I'm never having another drink of whiskey as long as I live. I promise you. That's Sunday. I wake up Monday. I think to myself, I shouldn't have said that. I should not have said that. I'd have to go to a wedding that following Saturday. You ever go to a wedding sober? It's a bad deal. A bad, bad deal. I would be at the church sweating, thinking about the reception that's going to start in 3 hours. I'm back at that reception and the dance is going to start and I don't have anything in me and my hands are sweaty. I got a knot in the pit of my gut. I feel awkward and out of place and it is horrible. And I have to do one of two things. I got to get over to that bar and get a drink into me, or I got to get out of there because I can't stand the way I feel. And every decision I make is based on that fear. You want to know what kills an alcoholic like me? I don't even know I'm afraid. I think I'm afraid of nothing, and I'm afraid of everything, and I don't even know it. We talk an awful lot in these discussion topic meetings. Let's discuss resentments tonight, huh? Isn't that nice? I prefer to call it hate. Hate. Now, I know you're not that sick in Virginia, but in Toronto, we are. I'm the type of alcoholic. I'm out driving in my car. I'm at a red light, and I'm on the nod by now. And that light would turn green, and the guy behind me lays on his horn. Whoa. I almost go through the roof of my car. I want to get out of my car, go back there, open the door, drag him out by his throat, take a crowbar, and crack his skull open. Now, I know you nice people don't think things like that in Virginia, but I do. I'm not talking anger management here. I'm talking rage. I'm talking a white rage that you don't have 10 minutes before and you don't have 10 minutes after. But I have an anger that comes out every now and then that I can't control. And I say things to people or do things to people I never wanted to say or do. And do you want to know who takes the brunt of my anger? It happens behind closed doors. The people who love me take the brunt of my anger because I'm a guy who's constantly seeking your approval. So you don't display that anger there. You keep it for the people whose approval you think you already have. Lonely. I'm standing at a subway platform in downtown Toronto on a Friday night, all jacked up, and a train pulls up and the door is open and a young couple my age get off that train holding hands. And they walk off into the night laughing and smiling. And I look at that couple and I feel like crying. And I think, why can't I be like those people? Why's all the trouble got to keep happening in my life time and time again? I'd just like to be like those people. Guys, from as long as I can ever remember, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. If I was at this bar, I'd say, drink up, let's go to the other bar. If we're at this party, drink at that party, we're going down to that party. If I'm married to you, I should be married to her. Never quite right. And I'll tell you guys, I get one of those double vodkas. It was like this. I did that in a meeting one night. Two guys get up and left. They remembered the feeling. I'll tell you guys, I'd have two or three of those double vodkas. And I walk into that wedding like I own the joint, and I am moving, and I am grooving, and I'm talking to the ladies, and I'm sitting with my buddies, and we're drinking and snorting and carrying on, and at that moment, everything in my life is absolutely perfect, huh? Same wedding, same hall, same music, same people, same food, same everything, but you put two vodkas in me, and my perception of reality changes. And I get an immediate, not in 28 days, an immediate sense of ease and comfort. And that's why I drink whiskey, because I like the effects it produces. But I'm alcoholic. something happens to me that doesn't happen to the non-alcoholic, called a phenomenon of craving. And I'd start drinking, I'd end up drinking 60 ounces of vodka and I'd smash up my car. I'd go out after work for a few beers with my buddy Ken. I go on a 5-day bender, I don't go to work, I'm losing my job. I tell my wife I'm going out for a loaf of bread, I run into Dustin, I come home a month later, my wife's leaving. I'm out there drinking, partying, carrying on, I don't want to stop, I got no money, so I'm stealing yours. And now I go to jail. And what everybody focused on in my life was crash cars, broken marriages, lost jobs, going to jails. We looked at drinking. We looked at drinking. We never looked at alcoholism. And people told me from the time I was 18 years old, Butch, if you just quit drinking and sticking those needles in your arms, you'll be all right. And there are times I wasn't drinking, and guess what? I wasn't all right. As a matter of fact, I'm crazier sober than I ever was when I drank. But all those well-meaning people could see was when I drank, the trouble that followed. So naturally, they said, stop drinking, you'll be okay. But those well-meaning people didn't understand how I feel when I'm sober. How could they know? I didn't know. I'd love to tell you tonight, I woke up one morning, HFC Finance was dying to lend me money, work was sinking up promoting me, and my wife was sending me flowers. And I thought, I think I'll join AA today. Every now and then, I hear some moron in one of these rooms say things like, if you're not here for the right reasons, you might as well drink. And every now and then, I'd like to get my tire iron back out. The right reasons? Did you come to Alcoholics Anonymous for the right reasons? I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had nowhere else to go. One more time, my back was against the wall. My boss called me into a work, Denise, on a Tuesday. He said, Butch, you're a hard worker. I said, well, thank you. He said, but you're not here much. Picky, picky, picky. He said, you think you might have a problem with alcohol? I said, no, but I know what the problem is. He said, maybe you share that with me. I said, it's my health. He said, really? I said, yes. Now, granted, my poor health may have something to do with my drinking. I'm going to quit drinking. My health's going to get better. Everything's going to be okay. He said, you think you might need some help quitting drinking? I said, no, I'm just going to quit. Got up and left his office. Was to find out later his wife had been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for many years. Can you imagine the chuckle he had as I left? Huh? Oh, he's just going to quit. That was Tuesday. I woke up Thursday in another town in another hotel room drunk. I didn't keep him waiting long. And for whatever that reason, that morning, I knew the jig was up. You know when you know, huh? You've used all the lies. Alcoholics are liars, eh, Billy? I don't know what that's about. I will lie when the truth would serve me better. I am a pathological liar. I am the type of alcoholic that goes out and plays golf all by himself and cheats on the scorecard. That's not the best part. At the end, I look at the card and go, good game, Butch, good game. So I've used all the lies. I got to come up with something good. I turned my mind to, and it came to me. I know what I'll tell them. I had a few tequilas leveled out, and it came. I know what I'll tell them. I'm alcoholic. I'm going to go to AA. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And if there's anybody here tonight who's new, we couldn't care less why you're here. We couldn't care less. We're just glad to see you. And maybe by the grace of God, something someone will say, something you'll hear, something you'll read, and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous can happen in your life, and you too can go on to live a happy and useful life like so many men and women have been able to. Just keep coming. And on September the 21st, 1989, two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. Now that should tell you something right there, shouldn't it? My mother's house. Somewhere every 33-year-old self-respecting alcoholic should be is with his mummy. Two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. They made the effort to come to her home, came to my mother's house and talked to me about their drinking. They did not talk to me about my drinking. They did not tell me I shouldn't drink, I shouldn't go drug, I shouldn't go to treatment. They didn't tell me nothing. Those two men came to my mother's house, talked to me about their drinking, and told me what had happened in their lives since they came to something called Alcoholics Anonymous. Would I like to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? I was a helpless, hopeless, chronic alcoholic. I've been running the streets, drinking whiskey and shooting dope since I was 13 years old. And those two men came to my mother's house, September the 21st, 1989. And I have been with you ever since that night. Boy, oh boy, I've been a blessed man. Deep love in my heart for the old timers. Deep, deep love. deep love. Men and women have been coming for 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 years who made sacrifices and commitments to Alcoholics Anonymous for to be here for a guy like me and the new people. I love them from the bottom of my heart. And if you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I strongly urge you, get close to these men and women and learn from their experience, because we won't have them with us forever. And I had some giants. I've heard people say you should never put people on pedestals. Well, you do what you need to do. But I'm going to tell you right now, I have some people on pedestals, giants in our program. Never for a moment have I lost sight of their humanities. My sponsor was an old timer in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor came to Alcoholics Anonymous on July the 17th, 1958, and was an active member until the day he died on June the 10th, 2004. And the greatest gift that old man ever gave me, the greatest gift, it wasn't some profound thing he pulled out of the book, some divine spiritual wisdom he laid on me. The greatest gift that old man ever gave me was he allowed me to see his warts. He allowed me to see him get afraid. He allowed me to see him get angry. He allowed me to see him get selfish. He allowed me to see all of him. Because if he hadn't, and you don't continue to, I will never measure up. We are much more brothers and sisters in our defects than we are in our virtues, aren't we? And I had some wonderful people come into my life. You were the first people who helped me understand what my problem was, because when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. Now, I'd been told what my problem was. As a matter of fact, quite a few people told me. My wife told me what my problem was. My parents had told me what my problem was. Denise, I had a couple judges tell me what my problem was, a couple of psychiatrists. I'd heard my whole life. Just quit drinking, you'll be okay. You were the first people that said, kid, drinking's not your problem. Drinking's your solution. How I feel when I'm sober is my problem. You see, sober, I'm prone to misery and depression. Sober, I can't seem to control my emotional natures. Sober, I can't form true relationships with others. Sober, I can't seem to make a living or be of real use. Sober, I'm full of fear and unhappy. Friends, that is a spiritual malady. And an alcoholic of me not drinking and not treating that malady, I will get so uncomfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to do one of two things. I don't have a choice. I have lost the power of choice. I either have to drink again or blow my brains out. Most of us drink again. But we all know someone who paid the supreme price, don't we? Never had a clue. You told me that selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of my troubles. I didn't do an inventory and go, my, you haven't been a very nice boy. I did not need to inventory to find out I was a lying, cheat, and thief. I knew that. But I had no idea of how self manifests in my life in many different ways and blocks me off from the power. And I don't have a clue that it's happening. Selfishness and self-centeredness, you told me, was the root. And from that selfishness and self-centeredness comes 100 forms of fear and all my resentments, but all based in self. And you told me above everything, I must be rid of it or else it will kill me. And there seems no way of getting rid of it without God's help. And that, my friends, is the purpose of our 12 steps and our program. Through some actions that I take and some principles I try to live by, I can get connected to a power greater than myself. I didn't have a clue. I thank God for strong sponsorship. I am the product of strong sponsorship, and I believe in strong sponsorship. And I'm a guy that believes without strong sponsorship, our chances of recovery are very, very minimal. I sponsor a lot of guys, and I know you guys and gals sponsor a lot of folks too. And we can see in 1 minute when they start to drift, can't we? 1 minute, I see it just like that. I can hear it when they phone me. I say, you're lying. Huh? But it's an interesting thing. I don't see it so clearly in me. There's like a thin veil there when it comes to me seeing me. That's why sponsors need sponsors. And I thank God for that. And so you took me through the process. And I'm not going to go into that tonight. Time won't do it. But you took me through inventory, fact-finding, not a confessional, a fact-finding. You see, I deal in delusion. I at certain times cannot differentiate the truth from the false. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous thinking I'm a nice guy, because I did things for people. I'm not a nice guy. I'm a user and a taker. You helped me see this. You helped me see how self manifests in my life in many different ways. And you took me through that inventory, and you took me through the amends process, an incredibly freeing experience. And the great gift you gave me is you introduced me to a loving God, to a loving God. You see, I was never a disbeliever. If you'd asked me when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, do you believe in God? I would have said, yes, I believe in God. It had as much meaning in my life as the price of coffee beans in Brazil tonight, but I wasn't a disbeliever, right? And if you asked me about God, God was way up there in heaven, huh? He's got long hair and a big beard and a big stick, Charlton Heston, huh? Uh-huh. And if you are good, good things happen. And if you are bad, bad things happen. Chuck Chamberlain used to say, we have one problem and only one problem. That's all you and I have is one problem. And from that one problem comes all our other problems, but we just have one. And that one problem is a conscious separation from God. Well, if God's way up there and I'm down here, have you ever heard more of a conscious separation in your life? You were the first people who said to me, no kid, deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. And in the final analysis, it is only there that he may be found. And the central fact of my life, the great reality, is my creator has entered my heart and lives in a way that is indeed miraculous. You introduced me to that God through listening to your stories, Gary, and watching your actions. In our own language and from our own point of view, how we're able to find that. You introduced me by watching you. And it is the greatest relationship in my life. Okay, I got that. I'm going to tell you this and one more quick story. So don't you love our book? Of course, that's a stupid question, isn't it? Don't you love our book? The longer I'm sober, the more I love it. I believe that our book is a spiritual vortex. What I mean by that is I don't care how long you're sober. I don't care what your spiritual life looks like, how far you are down the spiritual path. I can open that book at any given time and read a couple paragraphs and see things that I've never seen it in that way before. And there is no end to it. There is no end. It is infinity. Spirit does not end. Wow. Bill Wilson could not have experienced most of what he wrote. He was only 2.5 years sober when he started writing it. He couldn't have been divinely inspired. And I love his writing where he says that we will suddenly realize, suddenly, that God is doing for us what we could never do it for ourselves. You know that moment? I know many of you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you don't, I pray God you stay till you do. But you know that moment, Billy, when you know. You read something, you hear something, and you see and you fill up with tears, and you know. I come to be with you folks many weekends in the year. I come to the United States and I fly Friday morning. I'm 40 minutes from the airport and I come early on Friday to be part of the conference. I ain't an AA speaker. You become an AA speaker, you stop becoming an AA member. I go to the conference. You know, want to know how self-centered I am, Denise? Listen to this one. I'll get back where I was, but I am so self-centered that I thought that I was going to conferences because God wanted me to carry a message to somebody. And I've been doing this for 25 years, and it was years later that it dawned on me, which maybe he's having you to go to the conference to hear a message. Do you ever think of that? Yeah. So anyway, I get up early Friday mornings because I come to be part of the conference. And it's a 40-minute drive, and I get in my car, and I start to drive down that highway, and it's a beautiful morning. And I'm driving down that highway and the sun's shining and I stick a little Leonard Skinner in, a little Free Bird, a little Simple Man. And I drive down there and I think of what you've done for me in my life and my family, and the tears pour down my face. And for a brief moment, I am conscious of the presence of God. And we go from believing to knowing. If believing was enough, we'd only need two steps. I know many, many people believe to get drunk. I need to be connected to that power, connected. And that's what our program has given me and done for me. And a great gift, if we want to keep it, we got to give it away. That nothing ensures us immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. When all else fails, is the occasional good deed is not enough. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends on our constant thought of others. Unless I continue to enlarge and perfect my spiritual life through unselfish acts and helping others, I will surely drink when we hit those certain low spots. And if you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, my dear friends, let me tell you, some low spots will happen. Life will happen. You and I, we have a singleness of purpose, a primary purpose, but our book talks about a real purpose, to be of maximum service to God and those about us. That's what our 12 steps are doing. You and I, when armed with facts about ourselves and armed with this solution, are able to win the entire conference of another alcoholic in a few short hours. Until such an understanding happens, little or nothing can be done for the alcoholic. We have been uniquely gifted to help others. You and I are then given the ability to change people's lives. That is not an ego statement. That is a statement with gratitude and humility. You and I can help another alcoholic when nobody else. We're blessed. We're blessed. One last story, Billy, and we'll be done. Power. It says in the 12 and 12, I'm paraphrasing, so don't be yakking at me after the meeting, but it says self-examination, prayer, and meditation, when taken separately, produce a wonderful result, but when logically interwoven, form an unshakable foundation for life, an unshakable foundation for life, so that when life happens, we're together. Some years ago, our five-year-old granddaughter was diagnosed with leukemia, and she had to go to Sick Kids Hospital for 5 months and have chemotherapy and a spinal tap once a week. That little girl never complained one single day, not one day. And 5 months later, the cancer went away, and Sarah came home cancer-free. And 4 or 5 months later, the cancer came back, and they said, it's worse. And she's got to come back. We're going to give her the strongest radiation, the strongest chemo we can for 3 or 4 months. And then she has to have a bone marrow transplant. She has a 30% chance. We didn't have a match for the bone marrow. So our son-in-law, he had had a vasectomy, but he had it reversed so that Leah could get pregnant and hope the baby would be a match. Because the family member's a 25% chance. None of the family was a match. Odds would be good. So Leah had a baby, had Matthew, wasn't a match. So they were going to do a stem cell transplant. It's something that they do different today. But it meant Sarah was going to be in isolation for 4 months and very, very sick. They wipe everything out of you. There's nothing left in you. And they did that stem cell transplant, and the doctors couldn't believe what they saw. They had never done a stem cell transplant from somebody who'd just given birth. Now, I don't understand any of this, but something about that birth did something to the stem cell. And it worked incredible. They were talking to children's hospitals all over North America. They'd never seen anything. She wasn't in isolation 4 months. She was there 4 weeks and wasn't even sick and came home cancer-free. And 4 months later, the cancer came back. And they said, there's nothing more we can do. We can't do any more. You take your daughter home and have the best time you can with her in the next 6 months. And in that time, Billy, our granddaughter, did a lot of things. Our little granddaughter met Justin Bieber. Our granddaughter heard Katy Perry. Our granddaughter drove a real race car. And the Toronto Zoo brought lions to the house. And in October, they brought reindeer and a sled and a Santa Claus because she wasn't going to be here for Christmas. And she had a Christmas with real reindeer. And on November 2nd of that year, we buried our 7-year-old granddaughter. And that was a horrible day. Somebody said to me, Butch, you talk an awful lot about God in those AA meetings. If there's a God, how did he let that happen to that little girl? That little girl never did anything to anybody. How did this God you talk about let that happen? And I said, God had absolutely nothing to do with Sarah passing. But the minute she passed, God had everything to do with that. There's a line in our book that says if we do certain things, we're going to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. I have no idea what this looks like, but I believe that there is some place so beautiful that you and I can't even imagine. and that our granddaughter and maybe somebody that's been ripped out of your life is there watching over us, and they're our angels. Huh? You see, Alcoholics Anonymous gives us an unshakable foundation for life, an unshakable foundation. Everything in my life that is good, anything that I am or ever hope to be, is because of Alcoholics Anonymous and people like you. Everything in my life. You know, just because we become Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon members, life doesn't stop happening. Sometimes something is ripped out of our life so important that it hurts to breathe. It hurts to breathe. And you feel like you can't make it another day. And I'll tell you, that's when the men and women in your home group and a power that we've been introduced to will pick you up and carry you home every single time. You see, my friends, Alcoholics Anonymous works in the good times, and Alcoholics Anonymous works in the tough times. Alcoholics Anonymous works all the time, all the time. Billy, I want to thank you for the privilege of being here tonight. Thank you guys for listening to me. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you, Butch, so much for such a great talk.